Hello and welcome to DevelopPod, the podcast from the Teacher Development Special Interest Group of IATEFL. My name is James Taylor and welcome to today's episode. And this episode is a special one because if you're a loyal listener, you'll know that in the last year we've been focusing on the future of teacher development. And through this theme, we've looked at a variety of different perspectives and different areas by interviewing a series of special guests and experts. And today is the final episode in that strand. If for any reason you've missed any of those episodes, I highly recommend you go back and check out any of the ones you've missed. And of course, if you're joining us today for the first time, welcome. And you can, of course, go back in our archive of the 48 previous episodes on a huge variety of themes and topics. But anyway, on to today's episode. We're delighted to be joined by Joe Gakonga. Joe has worked in ELT for over 30 years in a range of countries and contexts, including Taiwan, the Czech Republic, Kenya, and Switzerland. She's a CELTA trainer, assessor, and joint chief assessor, and she co-authored IELTS Foundation for Macmillan. She runs ELTtraining.com, which has a range of courses for English language teachers, and she also recently completed a PhD on mentoring. So now I'll pass you over to Christian and Joe.
So welcome to Joe Gakonga to the virtual studio.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here.
I believe you're in Sydney, is that right?
Yes, I am in sunny Sydney, although it's early in the morning at the moment, so the sun hasn't actually come up yet.
And thank you for joining us so early. I believe it's just gone 6 o'clock there in the morning.
That's right. I like the morning, though. I'm a bit of an early bird.
That's brave. That's brave, especially with a cold. So bless you. Thank you. Bless you quite literally. So it's in the same series that listeners are tuning into, as in the future of teacher development. And I think you've got a specific, very interesting take on it. That is for more novice or newer teachers. Would you say that's kind of 0 to 2 years? I mean, obviously it's flexible, but what would you define that as?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's always difficult to know, isn't it? Because, you know, for example, in my own case, I started teaching before I did a qualification, you know, and I think a lot of people fall into language teaching and then later do qualifications, and it's an ongoing process. But yeah, generally, I suppose in the first year or two is when you're kind of making enormous strides and trying to find your feet in the classroom, I suppose, you know.
Okay. Yeah, and you touched on it there. So tell us a bit about what you're doing right now. I think a lot of people will have heard of you, but not necessarily everyone. A little bit about your background, maybe, but particularly what you're doing right now.
Sure. So I'm very old. I've been teaching for over 30 years. And CELTA training for about 20 of those. Taught in a lot of different contexts, overseas and in the UK, and now I'm freelance. And worked in ESOL for a long time, and then at the Warwick University on MAT ESOL course. And now I run my own business, making video-based training material for for trainees and novice teachers, and teaching other teachers how to make video so that they can have their own businesses too.
Thank you. So let's go back a step. In what ways would you say teacher development has changed in the last few years, and perhaps with respect to more novice teachers?
I mean, I think the big thing is, and it's not the last few years, it's quite a few years, but since I've been teaching, I guess, is that when I started, and even later on, so much of it depended on whether you were in a good school or not. If you're in a good school that supported you and had colleagues who were supportive, then you had a really good chance for development. And if you didn't, you didn't. Whereas I think now it's so much easier to develop on your own because of the internet. There's so many resources out there that you can either access on your own, or that you can join in, teacher development groups, or things like Facebook groups and LinkedIn groups and what have you. So I think there's so much more available, and it's so much easier to be part of a group of motivated teachers if you're motivated to find them.
To find that
So
personal
that's the
learning
really big one. Yeah, the whole network thing. I think that's the biggest change from when I was a novice teacher. I was lucky. I was in schools where I did have a lot of support and enthusiastic colleagues, and that was huge for me. But at the point when I started, I suppose about sort of 10, 12 years ago, I did the MA at Warwick, and started to get more interested in online education, online training and development. That was when I suddenly realized, well, actually, you can find your community in a much wider sense, even if you're working in schools where that support isn't necessarily there.
Okay, thank you. What themes do you currently see in teacher development?
I suppose actually it was interesting because I looked at this question and my immediate thought was, the thing that's on everybody's lips at the moment to call it is AI and machine translation and how that's going to affect things in the future. And so I was thinking, well, what themes are there? And I thought, well, let's just put it into Bard and see what it comes up with.
Really? Well, what
Yeah,
do
I
you
thought, why not? And it was interesting because it came up with about half a dozen things, and four or five, I thought, yeah, those fit with my ideas too. A couple of them, I thought, no, that they probably aren't so me or what I think. And so I think that that's a big one. The huge one is how AI and machine translation, particularly because of our industry, is going to affect things in the future. And the things it came up with for teacher development were things like personalized learning. I think that's true. So that's true for learners, very true for learners, but also true for teachers. So you've got much, you don't have to anymore just say, well, I'm going to do the Delta or do an MA. Brilliant though those qualifications are, you can choose your own path through.
I think
I'm interested in this, I'm interested in that. I think that's true though, because so there's a lot of short courses that you can do. There's a lot of webinars that you can attend on all sorts of different areas. So you can really pick your own path very easily now, I think. And I think although something like Delta or an MA is recognised by an employer, I think if I were an employer and somebody said, well, look, I've done this, that, and the other course, and I'm interested in X, Y, Z, that would impress me, even though it was a less standardized path, or perhaps. Having said that, I'm not an employer, so I guess I shouldn't put words into people's mouths, but I would see that as being something that would be positive about someone's attitude to their own development.
And employers need specialists. I've been there, right? And you need people to focus on certain areas. Yeah. And
Yeah,
that was
absolutely.
one thing. What else did presumably Chat
Yeah,
GPT?
lots of other things. Another one was mental health, and I think that's another one that's really interesting in teacher development is what teaching generally is that I think people's awareness of mental health has become much stronger in the last few years, and it's become less stigmatized, and it's okay to be thinking about looking after your own mental health. So I think that that's a positive thing.
And it's been a big theme at IATF all over the last few years as well.
Yeah, definitely. Because teaching, can be very stressful. It's a lovely job. I have loved every minute. I mean, nobody's loved every minute. That's a silly thing to say, but I've had a lot of fun in my career, and I'm really happy that I chose the path that I chose, and it's been very varied over my life, and that's kept it very interesting. But I have seen many colleagues burning out, and I seen situations where enormous things are asked of people, and people give. I think, you go into teaching because you're the kind of person who perhaps is willing to give and wants to give and wants to be generous with your time and resources, and that can be problematic for your own sanity sometimes, perhaps.
Believe me, I've been there. Okay, I think we're on number three. What else did
Number three,
about
technology, use of technology, I guess appropriate use of technology. That's a huge one for me. I think so much is changing in language learning generally, and therefore in language teaching. And this is a huge theme, and I can see it sort of coming up again in the other questions that you've asked. But at a point where machine translation is actually pretty good and will get better and will get easier, and there's going to be, already I've seen them advertise actually, a little earbud that you put in your ear, and then I speak English and you hear Spanish, and you speak Spanish to me and I hear English or whatever. Where that kind of stuff is available, or people can simply put an email, business email, into Google Translate, it'll come out with a very acceptable translation. Then there's a big question about why would you bother to spend all that time and effort and money learning a language? And that impacts obviously on language teaching. So all of these questions, I'm not saying it's all going to disappear, but it's going to change
And
significantly because of
maybe
those things.
we work on that intrinsic factor even more. I mean, we're good at that, aren't we? Appealing to the love of learning a language, but maybe that's where the future lies even more.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's true, certainly. But there's always going to be people who are, either just really love the idea of learning languages and want to learn languages. There's always going to be some of those. But they're not the majority of people who've been my students over 30 years of my career. There's a significant number like that, particularly because I teach adults generally. But there's an awful lot of people who learn it for more transactional reasons, or more, professional reasons, or because I have to, because I've got a school exam, or I've got to get into X, Y, and Z university or whatever. There's very often more of those, operational reasons.
Well, I'm just wondering if the transactional reason is largely negated through technology, which is what you seem to be suggesting, then maybe either our client group will be massively reduced, or we need to change how we do things to appeal to that intrinsic factor.
I honestly don't know what the, I mean, of course nobody can know. But I find it a fascinating sort of thought experiment, but also, just a little bit scary to some extent. I'm kind of glad I'm at the end of my career, not the beginning of it, because I think,
We'll be gone, and they'll be teaching other things along with English as well. I mean, people already are, right?
Yeah, sure.
So that's number, I
Absolutely.
think that was number three. And number four, according to ChatGPT.
Elaboration was another one that came on. So and I think that's true, and it's obviously much easier now because of the ability to connect. You're sitting there in Brighton, I'm sitting in Sydney, and we've got a seamless connection basically for free. I mean, okay, we pay a Zoom subscription or something, but basically it's free. That for me is phenomenal, and makes collaboration really possible. I find particularly where, for me, if you've got bigger Zoom, like going to webinars versus going to conferences, for example. I went to IATEFL recently, and it was so brilliant, so brilliant to see people again, to be in a room with people. It was so fantastic, and I really enjoyed it. So I think that experience isn't going to go away because people enjoy it so much. And I think where you've got a conference online, it's not the same. I personally don't like online conferences very much. I don't tend to get so much out of them. I'd rather watch the recording of the talk and skip through the bits that are interesting to me, actually, much as that's awful to say, it's true. But if I'm in a room with three or four people, or two or three people on a Zoom room online, I find that just as a reasonable experience as being in a room with them face to face. Of course, it's nice to see people, and but it in terms of learning, I find that very positive and just as reasonable. I have a part of a professional group, a couple of people that we meet together and we talk about professional things on a reasonably regular basis, and that I find I don't think it would be much more valuable to me if we were in a room. It'd be perhaps socially nicer, but it wouldn't, I don't think it adds that much more to it to be together when it's a small group like that. So, and those people are sort of scattered geographically. We couldn't meet together otherwise. So that sort of possibility for collaboration with other teachers is, I think that is something that's going to continue to grow. I can't see how that wouldn't, because it's so valuable.
And I think it will continue to grow online, right? Completely. I do agree that
Definitely.
I tend to get it much more out of it face to face. That said, there's plenty of workshops I've been to face to face that have been without much value for me, and plenty of online work
Sure.
which have been full of fascinating content. And ultimately, it depends on the content, doesn't it?
That's certainly true. I think there's a difference in the between. The sort of the somewhere where you're going for content, and that I think the online environment does very well, because as well you've got access then to the best people. You can go and listen to, you may not be able to go to afford to go to a conference, but you can go and listen to all of the plenaries at IATF online. They're there. So the content, really high quality content, is available online. But I suppose more of what I'm talking about is the ability to be in a small group with people who are, particularly people who are in your same situation, like peers, where you can reflect on your own practice and hear other people's ideas and thoughts about what's happening in their practice. And that's not necessarily about learning something new. It's about an ability to reflect effectively on your own practice. I think actually saying it out loud makes a big difference and helps you to move forward. That's certainly been my experience, and the experience that I've seen other people, MA students, have very frequently is that it's almost like Julian Ager talks about cooperative development, where essentially you've got listeners who are going to
Or
be
back.
interested. And I think that idea is phenomenally powerful.
I agree. Okay. Collaborative learning. And number five, I think, Lauren.
So I've got this was sort of the last one that was that kind of resonated with me, and that was the idea of continuous learning. And that's not new. It's not a new theme, obviously, but again, I think the there's definite because of the availability of ongoing learning, it's not just about, well, I've done my CELTA, I've done my Delta, or I've done an MA and now I'm finished. That there's a lot more of an emphasis, and perhaps it's the same sort of things we were talking about with personalized learning, of finding your own track and also finding other things that you're interested in. So for me, it was, I fell into video making, for example, about 10 years ago. And it's been a huge learning curve because it's very different engaging people in a class when you can see them, to engaging people in video where you have to kind of anticipate how they're going to react. So,
You're certainly
yeah.
the video queen. I'm not sure you've necessarily got that name tag, but I think that's definitely
Well,
how you're known.
that's very, very nice. I really love it, and I find it really creative and interesting. And I think because I came to a point in my career where I was fairly comfortable with being in the classroom. You can always learn more, but you sort of feel comfortable. And then suddenly you've got this whole nother avenue of, wow, I don't know how to do this, and I'm going to have to learn, and I'm interested to learn, and oh, well, can I try that, or can I try that, and which works best? And I think that that's been for me very interesting professionally and challenging. And so I think that that's sort of thing where you can take a new track, and that doesn't necessarily mean for teachers necessarily technological. It could be, well, I've never taught IELTS before, and I'm going to have to learn how to do that, and it's different. Or I'm going to, I want to learn how to, teach young learners or teach.
Or the hearing impaired, which is what a friend of
Yeah.
mine does, and
Oh,
it's
right.
fascinating.
Interesting.
Fascinating. What new areas, looking into your crystal ball, do you perhaps foresee in the future of teacher development for newer teachers?
Yeah, I suppose it was going to ITEFL this year recently is very much in my mind because it was such a great event, and there was a lot of talk, of course, about the future and particularly how AI will change things. Now, to some extent, I think it depends enormously on your context. So if you are a teacher who is teaching in a state school environment or teaching children who are doing, English as part of their curriculum, then I would imagine that will be pretty slow to change because, governments don't change curricula very quickly and these things sort of soldier on, and perhaps English is seen as a the lingua franca, obviously, and it's useful to learn a language. It's a good thing educationally to learn a language, all of those things. So I think that that environment will probably be much slower to change. But I think in the environment which is more an environment I'm familiar with, which is adult education and voluntary education, if you like, then things are likely to change very quickly because people's needs will be different. And exactly what we were talking about before, the people's motivation will be different. And perhaps that's true in school too. I mean, I guess for school children, motivation's always been an issue. How do you motivate kids who don't particularly want to learn language because they don't really see the point? That's how I felt about French and Spanish in school. I wasn't a happy language learner at school, and I think a lot of kids are in the same boat. Don't perhaps see the relevance of it, and perhaps it's even more difficult to motivate them when they say, "Well, look, I can just do it. Why do I need to learn a language? Because machine translation is going to do it for me." So perhaps that's something actually within schools that. Motivating people, making it an enjoyable process, making it a creative and communicative process is going to be even more important, perhaps.
Maybe, I don't know if you agree, but helping them with tools of, I mean, I just came across a tool to transcribe video just recently, and I used it in the classroom and shared it with my students who were mostly Swiss and German students, about 17, 18, and they absolutely loved it. They were motivated anyway, but they were super motivated by this tool because they had been asked by their English teacher to transcribe like old school some video, so they were going to use that. And it's about how to use these tools and what to use them for, and they found that enlightening. So
Yeah, for
they
sure.
weren't any less enthused about learning English actually, and that was something else. That was that motivating aside.
I mean, I think things, I mean, I've used Otter a lot for, I don't know what tool you use, but Otter.ai I find really does a good job, and I've used it a lot in my own work. And the other thing that's really useful for that then is getting people, you can get people to make recordings of their own speech and transcribe their recordings because it's much easier to see your own mistakes and to or to hone your language and have another go at it. If you can see it written down, it obviously slows the process and it's much easier to then see things. So I think, yeah, there's lots of ways in which technology doesn't have to completely take over. I went to a really interesting talk where a couple of women were working in a university setting where they were getting their learners to write a an email, a business email, transactional email, which required politeness strategy, as it was, about breaking bad news in some way. In L1, getting it machine translated using Google Translate or DeepL, and then looking at politeness strategies in English and how those are used, and analyzing the translation and changing it and making it more appropriate or whatever. And this, I thought, was a really, I think that kind of thing of learning how to use tools appropriately definitely is going to, even with, AI like Bard or ChatGPT, it what you put in will definitely affect what you get out.
Yeah. And so
So
yeah, maybe what we're both saying is that we need to be there at the forefront of technology and other developments and dovetail that and help students, particularly advanced students, because there are way more advanced students obviously nowadays, aren't there? Mostly. Dovetail their advanced knowledge of English with these life and technological skills.
And also, I just think as well, I mean, my son's living in China. He's teaching English, and he has learned Mandarin. He's sounding pretty good to me. I guess he's at sort of an intermediate level at the moment. He's been learning for about a year and a half or so, and he has only recently started to employ a teacher. He's never been to a Chinese class. He basically started off with Duolingo and just sort of learning some vocab and stuff. And he was interested in the characters too. And then he got language partners and language exchange partners online, and he speaks to people every day. He's very motivated. So self-motivation's an important one if you're going to do that. But I think that it's so possible. He's just got talking to people, not people who are teachers, just other people who wanted to learn English, and we'll speak English for half an hour, and we'll speak Chinese for half an hour. And obviously how much he could say was very limited at the beginning. But I think that that kind of environment for being able to push your own learning, and so maybe as a teacher, one of the big jobs that we have is showing people what resources are out there to learn outside of class. So, you might be in class an hour a week or a couple of hours a week, or maybe a few more if you're lucky, but there's an awful lot of time outside of class. And I do think that that autonomous learning and showing people resources which are useful and interesting for them, that's probably a really big part of where I think teachers have a good, a useful role to play. Because the problem with having so much information out there on the internet, of course, is that it's then you've got to find that needle in the haystack. You've got to sift through all of the sand to find something that's useful for you. And so a teacher can, I think, have an enormous
Role in curation.
benefit
Yeah,
in finding
completely.
that.
I mean, we've long since done that as teachers, haven't we? But that has become more crucial. Yeah. Okay. So, how will newer teachers perhaps need to adapt? I suppose be more agile, even that's a bit cliched, but how would you say they need to adapt?
I guess I think it's always just an ongoing process, isn't it? I mean, it's there's no magic bullet, there's no particular one thing you should do. I just think you as always, the advice has always been the same: be interested, try to think of new things, reflect on what you're doing. Think about how you want, what direction you want to go in. See what interests you, follow that path, I suppose.
Keep trying new things until.
Keep trying new things, try something new. John Fanslow talks about this. Fanslow, sorry, talks about this. He try something new, and it doesn't matter if you try something that doesn't work, that's okay. Because you learned something. You don't want to do that thing. I've tried some things and I went, well, no, actually, I don't like doing that. Okay, well, maybe try it one more time just in case. No, I really don't like doing that. Okay, fine, don't do it again. Try something else, but you don't progress, you don't find new things unless you keep trying. And failures are just as valuable in some ways as successes.
So, tied to the last question, perhaps the last one, what should a newer teacher's priorities be for the next, I don't know, 5, 10 years' time?
I saw that question when you
You
said
saw it coming, didn't you?
it to me,
No.
and it's just
It's loaded. You can't answer it, right?
I think just what I said. I mean, I can't really think that there's anything. I haven't got a crystal ball, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately. I don't think I'd want one. I genuinely wouldn't want one. I think all you can do is just keep trying new things. And because what works for one person will be very, very different for what works or is interesting for another, you know.
Super. And in terms of resources available that you produced for newer teachers, I'm sure you can tell us.
Yeah, I
What would
have a
you suggest?
whole raft of things. I've been making resources for over 10 years now, so there's an awful lot on the site.
So,
I've got
what
materials.
should a newer teacher put on that raft?
My experience has been that teachers are often worried about teaching grammar, and my experience of watching novice teachers teach is that it's often a bit of a grammar lecture because I've learnt it all and I've got to tell you about it. And so learning to teach grammar in a way that is more communicative, I think, is something that I think people are often nervous about. So I've got I think, a really nice course that will help teachers to do that. I've also got other courses for things like learning how to do dig-to-glass and exploiting lexis, sorry, from texts that you're already using, so to reduce your planning time and increase the learner's output. I've got lots of free resources on my site too, communicative activities, which has got lots of just ideas for taking into the classroom, because again, in my experience, especially novice teachers just want, please tell me something that I can take into the classroom that will work and that the learners will love and it will work and they'll learn something. So there's a whole raft of short videos in there with ideas that are tried and trusted, tried, tested and true. So have a look on my site. There's a section that's for teachers. So there's lots of material in there that hopefully will be helpful.
And we'll include the link, of course, with the show notes. Thanks so much,
Thank you.
Joe, and look forward to seeing you and the next IATEFL in Brighton, in fact.
Definitely, I'll definitely be there.
A big thank you to Christian and especially Joe for that fascinating interview. The eagle-eared or eyed among you will have noticed that this was episode 49 of DevelopPod. So the big episode 50 is coming up next, and we'll have something special for you there. So make sure you're looking out for that. The easiest way to stay in touch, of course, is to subscribe to the podcast on whichever podcast platform you are using to listen to me now. Before I leave you, I just want to remind everyone that our PCE pre-conference event at this year's IATEFL conference in Brighton is coming up very soon. Registration is open. We have confirmed our speakers will be Jeremy Harmer, Danny Norrington Davis, Fiona Mocklin, and Ben Beaumont. And we really hope you will join us and be part of this fantastic event with this fantastic lineup of presenters. Don't forget, if you want to stay in touch with anything to do with TDSIG, you can follow us on social media. Just do a search for TDSIG or IATEFL TDSIG, and we're in all the places that you would expect to find us. That's all from me today for today's episode. Look forward to seeing you next time for the big episode 50. My name is James Taylor, and until next time, this has been DevelopPod.